I was in a classroom. Desks, podium, closet. I ran to the closet, found it unlocked, and squeezed in amid boxes and several musty-smelling jackets. I attempted to conceal myself as best I could, but I knew if anyone checked in the closet, I would be discovered. I tried not to move, not even to breathe. The door to the classroom squeaked open, and I could hear several people enter and walk about the room. One seemed to be coming toward the closet, then stopped and headed in the other direction. They were talking loudly in Spanish. Then silence. No movement. I waited 10 minutes before I slowly cracked the closet door and looked out. The room was empty. I walked to the door. There was no indication of anyone outside. I quickly walked to the room where Sanchez and the soldier had hidden. To my surprise, I found it was not a room at all, but a hallway. I listened, but could hear nothing. I leaned against the wall, feeling anxiety in the pit of my stomach. I quietly called out Sanchez's name. No response. I was alone. I could feel a slight dizziness from the anxiety. I took a deep breath and tried to talk to myself. I had to keep my wits about me and increase my energy. For several minutes, I struggled until the colors and shapes in the hallway had more presence. I tried to project love. Finally, I felt better and thought of Sebastian again. If he was in his office, Sanchez would go there. Ahead, the hallway ended at another stairway, so I walked 2 flights down to the first level. Through the window of the stairway door, I'd looked down the corridor. No one was in view. I opened the door and walked ahead, not sure where I wanted to go. Then I heard Sanchez's voice coming from a room in front of me. The door was cracked. Sebastian's voice boomed back at him. As I approached the door, a soldier inside opened it suddenly and pointed a rifle at my heart, forcing me inside and against the wall. Sanchez acknowledged me with a glance and put his hand on the solar plexus. Sebastian shook his head in disgust. The young soldier who had helped us was nowhere to be seen. I knew that Sanchez's gesture to his stomach meant something. All I could think of was that he needed energy. As he spoke, I focused on his face, trying to see his higher self. His energy field widened. "You can't stop the truth," Sanchez said. "People have a right to know." Sebastian looked condescendingly at Sanchez. "These insights violate the scriptures. They could not be true." "But do they really violate the scriptures, or do they just show us what the scriptures mean?" "We know what they mean," Sebastian said. "We've known for centuries. Have you forgotten your training, your years of study?"
"No, I haven't," Sanchez said. "But I also know that the insights expand our spirituality.
They..." "According to whom?" Sebastian shouted. "Who wrote this manuscript anyway? Some pagan Mayan who'd learned somewhere how to speak Aramaic? What did these people know? They believed in magic places and mysterious energy. They were primitives. The ruins where the ninth was found is called the Celestine Temples, the Heavenly Temples. What could this culture possibly know about heaven?" "Did their culture endure?" he continued. "No. No one knows what happened to the Mayans. They just disappeared without a trace. And you want us to believe this manuscript? This document makes it sound as though humans are in control, as though we are in charge of change in the world. We are not. God is. The only issue humans face is whether to accept the scriptural teachings and thereby win our own salvation."
"But think about that," Sanchez replied. "What does accepting the teachings and winning salvation really mean? What is the process through which this happens? Doesn't the manuscript show us the exact process of becoming more spiritual, connected, saved, the way it actually feels? And doesn't the eighth and ninth show us what would happen if everyone were acting this way?" Sebastian shook his head and walked away, then turned and looked at Sanchez piercingly. "You haven't even seen the ninth insight."
"Yes, I have, part of it."
"How?"
Part of it was described to me before we arrived here. I read another section a few minutes ago.
What? How?
Sanchez walked closer to the older priest. Cardinal Sebastian, people everywhere want this last insight revealed. It places the other insights into perspective. It shows us our destiny, what spiritual consciousness really is. We know what spirituality is, Father Sanchez. Do we? I think not. We've spent centuries talking about it, visualizing it, professing our belief in it. But we've always characterized this connection as something abstract, something we believe in intellectually. And we've always cast this connection as something an individual must do to avoid something bad happening, rather than to acquire something good and tremendous. The manuscript describes the inspiration that comes when we are truly loving others and evolving our lives forward.
Evolve? Evolve? Listen to yourself, Father. You have always fought against the influence of evolution. What has happened to you?
Sanchez collected himself. Yes, I fought against the idea of evolution as a replacement for God, as a way to explain the universe without reference to God. But now I see that the truth is a synthesis of the scientific and religious worldviews. The truth is that evolution is the way God created and is still creating.
But there is no evolution, Sebastian protested. God created this world, and that's it.
Sanchez glanced at me, but I had no ideas to express. Cardinal Sebastian, he continued, the manuscript describes the progress of succeeding generations as an evolution of understanding, an evolution toward a higher spirituality and vibration. Each generation incorporates more energy and accumulates more truth, and then passes that status on to the people of the next generation, who extend it further.
That's nonsense, Sebastian said. There is only one way to become more spiritual, and that's by following the examples in the scriptures.
Exactly, Sanchez said. But again, what are the examples? Isn't the story of the scriptures a story of people learning to receive God's energy and will within? Isn't that what the early prophets led the people to do in the Old Testament? And isn't that receptivity to God's energy within what culminated in the life of a carpenter's son, to the extent that we say God himself descended to earth? Isn't the story of the New Testament, he continued, the story of a group of people being filled with some kind of energy that transformed them? Didn't Jesus himself say that what he did we could do also, and more? We've never really taken that idea seriously, not until now. We're only now grasping what Jesus was talking about, where he was leading us. The manuscript clarifies what he meant, how to do it. Sebastian looked away, his face red with anger. During the pause in the conversation, a high-ranking officer burst into the room and told Sebastian that the intruders had been seen.
Look,
the officer said, pointing out the window.
There they are!
300 or 400 yards away, we could see two figures running through an open field headed toward the forest. A number of soldiers at the edge of the clearing seemed ready to open fire. The officer turned from the window and looked at Sebastian, his radio raised. If they get to the wooded area, he said, they will be hard to find. Do I have your permission to open fire? As I watched the two running, I suddenly recognized who they were.
That's Will and Julia, I shouted.
Sanchez walked even closer to Sebastian.
In the name of God, you cannot commit murder over this.
The officer persisted. Cardinal Sebastian, if you want this manuscript contained, I must give the order now. I was frozen.
Father, trust me, Sanchez was saying. The manuscript will not erode all you have built, all you have stood for. You cannot kill these people.
Sebastian shook his head.
Trust you?
Then he sat down on his desk and looked at the officer. We will shoot no one. Tell your troops to capture them alive. The officer nodded and walked out of the room. Sanchez said, Thank you. You made the right choice. Not to kill, yes, Sebastian said, but I will not change my mind. This manuscript is a curse. It would undermine our basic structure of spiritual authority. It would entice people to think they are in control of their spiritual destiny. It would undermine the discipline needed to bring everyone on the planet into the church, and people would be caught wanting when the rapture comes. He looked hard at Sanchez. At this moment, thousands of troops are arriving. It doesn't matter what you or anyone else does. The Ninth Insight will never leave Peru. Now get out of my mission. As we sped away, we could hear dozens of trucks approaching in the distance. Why did he let us go? I asked. I suppose because he thinks it makes no difference, Sanchez replied, that there's nothing we can do. I really don't know what to think. His eyes met mine. We didn't convince him, you know. I too was confused. What did it mean? Perhaps we hadn't been there to convince Sebastian after all. Perhaps we were just supposed to delay him. I glanced back at Sanchez. He was concentrating on driving and searching the roadside for any sign of Will and Julia. We had decided that we would double back in the direction they had been running, but so far we had seen nothing. As we rode, my mind wandered to the Celestine ruins. I imagined what the site looked like. The tiered excavations, the scientists' tents, the looming pyramidal structures in the background. They don't seem to be in these woods, Sanchez said. They must have had a vehicle. We must decide what to do. I think we should go to the ruins, I said. He looked at me. We might as well. There's nowhere else to go. Sanchez made a turn to the west. What do you know of these ruins? I asked. They were built by two different cultures, as Julia said. The first, the Mayans, had a thriving civilization there, though most of their temples were further north in the Yucatan. Mysteriously, all signs of their civilization suddenly vanished about 600 BC without apparent cause. The Incas developed another civilization afterward at the same location. What do you think happened to the Mayans? Sanchez glanced at me. I don't know. We rode for several minutes in silence. Then I suddenly remembered that Father Sanchez had told Sebastian he had read more of the Ninth Insight. How did you see more of the Ninth Insight? I asked. The young soldier who helped us knew where another part was being hidden. After you and I were separated, he took me to another room and showed it to me. It added only a few more concepts to what Phil and Dobson told us, but it gave me the points I used with Sebastian. What did it say specifically? That the manuscript would clarify many religions and would help them fulfill their promise. All religion, it says, is about humankind finding relationship to one higher source. And all religions speak of a perception of God within, a perception that fills us, makes us more than we were. Religions become corrupted when leaders are assigned to explain God's will to the people, instead of showing them how to find this direction within themselves. The manuscript says that sometime in history, one individual would grasp the exact way of connecting with God's source of energy and direction, and would thus become a lasting example that this connection is possible. Sanchez looked at me. Isn't that what Jesus really did? Didn't he increase his energy and vibration until he was light enough to... Sanchez ended his sentence without finishing it and seemed to be deep in thought. What are you thinking? I asked. Sanchez looked perplexed. I don't know. The soldier's copy ended right there. It said that this individual would blaze a path that the whole human race was destined to follow. But it didn't say where this path led. For 15 minutes we rode in silence. I attempted to receive some indication of what would happen next,
but I could think of nothing. I seemed to be trying too hard.
There are the ruins, Sanchez said. Ahead, through the forest, to the left of the road, I could make out three large, pyramidal-shaped structures. After we parked and walked closer, I could tell the pyramids were constructed of cut stone and were spaced an equal distance apart, about 100 feet. Between them was an area paved with a smoother stone. Several excavation sites were dug into the base of the pyramids.
Look, there, Sanchez said, pointing toward the more distant pyramid.
A lone figure was sitting in front of the structure. As we walked that way, I noticed an increase in my energy level. By the time we reached the center of the paved area, I felt incredibly energized. I looked at Sanchez, and he raised an eyebrow. When we got closer, I recognized the person by the pyramid to be Julia. She sat cross-legged and held several papers in her lap.
Julia! Sanchez called.
Julia turned and stood up. Her face seemed iridescent.
Where's Will? I asked.
Julia pointed to her right. There, perhaps 100 yards away, was Will. He seemed to be glowing in the fading twilight.
What is he doing?
I asked.
The ninth, Julia replied, holding the papers toward us.
Sanchez told Julia that we had seen some of the insight, the part which foretold of a human world transformed by conscious evolution.
But where does this evolution take us? Sanchez asked.
Julia didn't answer. She just held up the papers in her hand as though she expected us to read her mind.
What?
I asked. Sanchez reached over and touched my forearm. His look reminded me to stay alert and to wait.
The ninth reveals our ultimate destiny, Julia said. It makes it all crystal clear. It reiterates that as humans, we are the culmination of the whole of evolution. It talks about matter beginning in a weak form and increasing in complexity, element by element, then species by species, always evolving into a higher state of vibration. When primitive humans came along, we continued this evolution unconsciously by conquering others and gaining energy and moving forward a little bit, and then being conquered ourselves by someone else and losing our energy. This physical conflict continued until we invented democracy, a system that didn't end the conflict but shifted it from a physical to a mental level. Now, Julia went on, we are bringing this whole process into consciousness. We can see that all of human history has prepared us to achieve conscious evolution. Now we can increase our energy and experience the coincidences consciously. This carries evolution onward at a faster pace, lifting our vibrations even higher.
She hesitated for a moment, looking at each of us, then repeated what she had said.
Our destiny is to continue to increase our energy level. And as our energy level increases, the level of vibration in the atoms of our bodies increases.
She hesitated again.
What does that mean? I asked.
It means, Julia said, that we are getting lighter, more purely spiritual. I looked at Sanchez. He was focused intensely on Julia.
The ninth insight, Julia continued, says that as we humans continue to increase our vibration, an amazing thing will begin to happen. Whole groups of people, once they reach a certain level, will suddenly become invisible to those who are still vibrating at a lower level. It will appear to the people on this lower level that the others just disappeared. But the group themselves will feel as though they are still right here. Only they will feel lighter.
As Julia talked, I noticed her face and body changing somewhat. Her body was taking on the characteristics of her energy field. Her features were still clear and distinct, but it was no longer muscles and skin at which I was looking. She looked as though she were made of pure light, glowing from within. I looked at Sanchez. He appeared the same way. To my amazement, everything appeared this way. The pyramids, the stone under our feet,
the surrounding forest, my hands. The beauty I was able to perceive had increased beyond anything I had experienced before, even when on the ridgetop. When humans begin to raise their vibrations to a level where others cannot see them, Julia continued, it will signal that we are crossing the barrier between this life and the other world from which we came, and to which we go after death. This conscious crossing over is the path shown by the Christ. He opened up to the energy until he was so light he could walk on water. He transcended death right here on earth, and was the first to cross over, to expand the physical world into the spiritual. His life demonstrated how to do this, and if we connect with the same source, we can head the same way, step by step. At some point, everyone will vibrate highly enough so that we can walk into heaven in our same form. I noticed Will was walking slowly toward us. His movement seemed unusually graceful, as though he was gliding. The insight says, Julia went on, that most individuals will reach this level of vibration during the third millennium, and in groups consisting of the people with whom they are most connected. But some cultures in history have already achieved the vibration. According to the ninth insight, the Mayans crossed over together. Julia abruptly stopped talking. From behind us we heard muffled voices in Spanish. Dozens of soldiers were entering the ruins, coming right for us. To my surprise, I was unafraid. The soldiers continued to walk in our general direction, but strangely not directly toward us.
They can't see us, Sanchez said. We're vibrating too highly.
I looked again at the soldiers. He was right. They were walking 20 or 30 feet to our left, completely ignoring us. Suddenly we heard loud shouts in Spanish by the pyramid to our left. The soldiers closest to us stopped and ran in that direction. I strained to see what was happening. Another group of soldiers were emerging from the forest holding the arms of two other men, Dobson and Phil. The sight of their capture jolted me, and I could feel my energy level plummet. I looked at Sanchez and Julia. Both were staring intently toward the soldiers and appearing equally disturbed.
Wait, Will seemed to shout from the opposite direction. Don't lose your energy.
I felt the words as well as heard them. They were slightly garbled. We turned to see Will walking quickly toward us. As we watched, he seemed to say something else, but this time the words were completely unintelligible. I realized I was having trouble focusing. His image was becoming hazy, distorted. Gradually, as I stared in disbelief, he disappeared altogether. Julia turned to face Sanchez and me. Her energy level seemed lower, but she was completely undaunted, as though whatever just happened clarified something.
We were able to maintain the vibration, she said. Fear lowers one's vibration tremendously.
She looked toward the spot where Will had faded from view.
The ninth insight says that while some individuals may cross over sporadically, a general rapture will not occur until we have abolished fear, until we can maintain a sufficient vibration in all situations.
Julia's excitement grew.
Don't you see? We can't do it yet, but the role of the ninth insight is to help create that confidence. The ninth insight is the insight of knowing where we are headed. All the other insights create a picture of the world as one of incredible beauty and energy, and of ourselves as increasing our connection with, and thus seeing this beauty. The more beauty we can see, the more we evolve. The more we evolve, the higher we vibrate.
The ninth insight shows us that ultimately, our increased perception and vibration will open us to a heaven that is already before us. We just can't see it yet. Whenever we doubt our own path or lose sight of the process, we must remember what we are evolving toward, what the process of living is all about. Reaching heaven on earth is why we are here. And now we know how it can be done, how it will be done.
She paused momentarily. The ninth mentions that a tenth insight exists. I think it must reveal... Before she could finish, a burst of machine gun fire ripped up the stone tiles by our feet. We all dived to the ground, our hands raised. No one spoke as the soldiers came and confiscated the papers and took each of us in a different direction. The first weeks after my capture were spent in constant terror. My energy level fell dramatically as one military officer after another questioned me threateningly about the manuscript. I played the dumb tourist and claimed ignorance. After all, it was true that I had no idea who among the other priests had copies or how widespread public acceptance of the document had become. Gradually, my tactic worked. Over time, the soldiers seemed to grow tired of me and passed me on to a group of civilian authorities who took a different approach. These officials sought to convince me that my trip to Peru had been crazy from the beginning. Crazy because, according to them, the manuscript never really existed. They argued that the insights had, in fact, been invented by a small group of priests with the intent to foster rebellion. I had been duped, these officials told me, and I let them talk. After a while, the conversations became almost cordial. Everyone began to treat me as a guiltless victim of this plot, as a gullible Yankee who had read too many adventure tales and found himself lost in a foreign country. And because my energy was so low, I possibly would have become vulnerable to this brainwashing, had something else not occurred. I was suddenly transferred from the military base where I was being held to a government compound near the airport in Lima, a compound in which Father Carl was also being detained. The coincidence brought back some of my lost confidence. I was walking in the open courtyard when I first saw him sitting on a bench reading. I strolled over, restraining my exuberance and hoping I wouldn't attract attention from the officials inside the building. When I sat down, he looked up at me and grinned. "I've been expecting you," he said. "You have." He put down his book, and I could see the delight in his eyes. "After Father Costu and I came to Lima," he explained, "we were immediately detained and separated, and I've been here in custody ever since. I couldn't understand why. Nothing seemed to be happening. Then I began to think repeatedly of you." He gave me a knowing look. "So I figured you would show up." "I'm grateful you're here," I said. "Did anyone tell you what happened at the Celestine ruins?" "Yes," Father Carl replied. "I spoke briefly with Father Sanchez. He was held here for a day before being taken away." "Is he all right? Did he know what happened to the others, and what about him? Were they going to imprison him?" "He had no information about the others. And as for Father Sanchez, I don't know. The government's strategy is to methodically search out and destroy all copies of the manuscript, then to treat the whole affair as a grand hoax. We'll all be thoroughly discredited, I imagine, but who knows what they will ultimately do with us." "What about Dobson's copies?" I said. "The first and second insights he left in the States." "They already have them," Father Carl replied. "Father Sanchez told me that agents of the government found out where they were hidden and stole them. Apparently, Peruvian agents have been everywhere. They knew about Dobson from the beginning and about your friend, Charlene." "And you think when the government is through, no copies will remain?" "I think it will be a miracle if any survive." I turned away, feeling my newfound energy diminish. "You know what this means, don't you?" Father Carl asked. I looked at him but said nothing. "This means," he continued, "that each of us must remember exactly what the manuscript said. You and Sanchez didn't convince Cardinal Sebastian to release the manuscript, but you delayed him long enough for the ninth insight to be understood. Now it has to be communicated. You have to be involved in communicating it." His statement made me feel pressured, and my aloof drama activated inside me. I leaned against the back of the bench and looked away,
which made Father Carl laugh. Then, at just that moment, we both realized several embassy officials were watching us from an office window.
Listen, Father Carl said quickly. From now on, the insights will have to be shared between people. Each person, once they hear the message and realize that the insights are real, must pass on the message to everyone who is ready for it. Connecting with energy is something humans have to be open to and talking about and expecting. Otherwise, the whole human race can go back to pretending that life is about having power over others and exploiting the planet. If we go back to doing this, then we won't survive. Each of us must do what we can to get this message out.
I noticed that the two officials were out of the building, walking toward us.
One more thing, Father Carl said, speaking lowly.
What? I asked.
Father Sanchez told me Julia had spoken of a 10th insight. It hasn't yet been found, and no one knows where it might be.
The officials were almost on us.
I've been thinking, Father Carl continued, that they're going to release you. You may be the only one that can look for it.
The men suddenly interrupted our conversation and escorted me toward the building. Father Carl smiled and waved and said something else, but I could only half pay attention. As soon as Father Carl had mentioned a 10th insight, I had been consumed by a thought of Charlene. Why was I thinking of her? How was she connected to a 10th insight? The two men insisted that I pack the few things I had left and follow them to the front of the embassy and into a state vehicle. From there, I was taken directly to the airport and up to a boarding concourse, where one of them smiled faintly and looked at me from behind thick glasses. His smile faded as he handed me a passport and a ticket for a flight to the United States, then told me in a heavy Peruvian accent to never, never return.
The End. You've been listening to The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, narrated by Tom Steckschulte.